Running a business is hard enough. Don't make it harder with a dozen apps that don't talk to each other. One for sales, another for inventory, a separate one for accounting. That's software overload. Odoo is the all-in-one platform that replaces them all. CRM, accounting, inventory, e-commerce, HR. Fully integrated, easy to use, and built to grow with your business. Thousands have already made the switch. Why not you? Try Odoo for free at odoo.com. That's odoo.com.
So, everybody, welcome to Finding Your Summit podcast. This is the live version. This is all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And before I get to this week's amazing guest, I just want to remind everybody that if they want to find out more about what's going on with me or check out more of my podcast, you can do that at www.markpattisonnfl.com. And there you can find, again, more of my podcasts. I would appreciate any kind of ratings and review you might want to give on iTunes. It's all about popularity with iTunes. It's not about me. It's about these amazing people like I have today on the pod to share their stories of inspiration that really give a lift to everyone. I need it too. I also have something called Amelia's Everest. My daughter has epilepsy, and we partner with the National Epilepsy Foundation, and we are raising money to go towards money and awareness to that great cause. My hope is one day my daughter will be cured of that disease. I know there's a lot of other people out there that have seizures as well. Okay, let's get on with the pod today. And I've got an amazing guest. I'm so jacked up, Coach Gary Pinkel. And I had the great fortune many, many years ago to be coached by him as I was just emerging into college football. Coach Pinkel, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Mark. How you doing?
Gosh, I mean, it's bizarre how time goes by. And, you know, I want to give you some props here. You know, you've gone on, and this I don't think is really any kind of a big secret to the guys that played for you many years ago at the University of Washington, myself included. You were such a guiding light, I think, you, the rest of the coaching staff, and of course, Coach James, in terms of who I am today, really creating that foundational piece of what it takes to play at that kind of level. And, you know, those were amazing years. Before I get there, and I want to kind of reset your career a little bit, you've had a couple bouts with cancer. You've had this phenomenal run in college football. You were the coach of the year in three different conferences. You're one of three of the most winningest coach of all time behind Paul Bear Bryant and Steve Spurrier. It's in a very elite group that you've been in. And then all of a sudden this little thing called cancer sneaks up on you. And it more or less forces you to resign from a profession that you've been in for 39 years. So how are you doing, and how did you deal with that?
Well, I'm doing fine now. You know, it happened in 2015. We had just won. We were 2014. We were ranked at the end 15th. We were ranked fifth, I think, in 13. And I had a lump on my neck and didn't think it was much of it. And I went in our trainer. We got it tested. And it was actually about 3 weeks ago, 5 years ago. And all of a sudden, he said, I think you should have it looked at. And so we went and looked at it. They looked at it, and they looked at me, and they said, we're concerned. I said, well, just tell me what you think it is. Because they're going to do a biopsy. Well, we think it's lymphoma. And I looked at him. Let's test it. So they tested it. I came back 2 days later. And he looked me in the eye and said, you have cancer. And I just was, you know, I've been really healthy my whole life. And I get into my brother and sister later. But it was, I feel for all those folks out there with cancer now. I mean, we're all on the same team. So I had to make a decision there. I just signed a 6-year new contract. And I didn't know what my cancer, if it was going to last for 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. I didn't know. But I think, Mark, for me was, I had to make a decision 5 years ago that I did not want to. I didn't want to work 35 weeks out of the year, you know, 80 hours of those 35 weeks, and miss all time with family, friends, and everybody. I got 8 grandkids, and I just said I'm not going to risk doing that because it just would break my heart if I did that. So I love coaching. I absolutely love it. I was so fortunate, so blessed but I decided to do it. And I retired, and I went immediately. I started doing chemo in Mayo, which is about a 6-hour drive from central Missouri here, Columbia, and was pretty clean for about 3 years. And then a year and a half ago, came back in a particular area. So I'm managing it. There's some people with a lot worse cancers than me. You know, the window that we have, I don't know. I'm just very fortunate every day. I feel blessed every day. And I really always been like that. But, you know, for me, it was just something that, you know, it's the mental side of it. And to all the folks out there with cancer, you know, number one, you know, God bless you. Okay. Number two is just keep battling. You got to battle. Whatever the battle is, whatever there is, you got to battle. I know that. I know, you know, and the attitude that you have is going to be real important, and you get good people around you. And I'm fortunate to have, you know, be able to check all those things off.
That's just incredible. There's a lot of things here I want to unpack. So number one, when you came to that decision, so there's two defining moments. It's the moment one where the medical doctor comes up to you and say, hey, listen, I got some bad news, and they break you the news. And so that probably hits you like a Mack truck, right?
Yeah. For me, I mean, I remember driving back, my wife dropped her off, would do something. And I remember just for the next week, 2 weeks, I'd just be driving around. We had a red light, a stoplight, and I'd be looking at the, I'd just look up this, look, I go, I got in the rearview mirror. I got cancer. I mean, I couldn't even believe it. You know, I just did. I didn't. And, so I understand, you know, those folks out there everybody's touched by cancer. I don't know any person that I know that someone in their family, somewhere, friends have cancer. So, and they're doing amazing things now too. So I always talk to people about you give a little bit of money to cancer research, you know, people, go, I gave $20, $50, $100 to cancer research, like it's no big deal. It's a big deal because we're winning the battle against cancer. We are, you know, not only nationally, but internationally. And for people, I just want everybody to encourage people. It doesn't matter how small it is. It's a big deal. You're making a difference in the fight against cancer when you give so that they can run studies and do the things necessary to come up with cures.
Yeah, that's just incredible. So you have that one impactful moment, you know, of just trying to ingest it and understand it. And now what am I going to do to go forward? And then there's this second mega decision in terms of being so successful. You're actually the most successful coach ever at the University of Missouri. And to go through that process, to think about what your future looks like. You just signed a new contract, and to step up, talk to your AD. And you know, like, this is it. I'm gonna take a time out. I'm gonna go deal with this. I'm gonna resign from coaching football. At that moment in time, I mean, was that like, you knew that in that minute, or was that more of an evolving process?
No, Mark, it was an evolving process because we were headed into that happened, you know, right in the middle of the summer there, or right in April, and then we started the next season, the 15 season. And I was still the head coach there. Our athletic director knew about it. We had other, you know, a couple of the people at the university knew about it. That's a different story. But anyway, that in itself was I just told him that I had it, but I didn't tell him I was going to retire. And just as the time was going week after week after week after week through that season, it got to the point where I just, you know, came home one day in September, and I talked to my wife a lot about it too. But I made a decision. I prayed about it a lot. That was, you know, that's been a great strength for me for my whole life. And I also, I didn't get in it for money, and I wasn't going to stay in it for money. Okay. When I got a coaching, you know, the coaches didn't make very much. I just love coaching. I've been blessed to have it. And I just signed a new year contract that was going to pay me $4.4 million a year. And I was then, you know, some people might say I was crazy. Yeah. But, you know, I didn't, again, this is not about that. This was all about time. And if I live another 20 years, it's awesome. If I live another 5, that's great. But I will never, ever regret working, you know, those long hours, which I loved, and coaching and all that stuff, recruiting, gone all the time. I'll never, ever regret that I did the wrong thing. And so I feel very, very comfortable with what I did.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I mean, look, the life of a coach is super, super demanding. I don't think people really understand about the recruits. I mean, essentially, you go from your immediate family to a family of 100 plus, not including upper campus, The athletic department, the people that you have to deal with on all these different levels, all the alumni that you go out and you do these rah-rah things at to raise more money and awareness for the university. And then each and every recruit, you know, for all the guys that you get, the 20 to 30 guys that you get on scholarship, you know, you've had to go through 300, 400, 500 kids, you know, just to get to those top ones that you bring in. And not every guy that comes in, especially when you're competing at the SEC level, that you're going to get every single dude that comes in. So, you know, it's a lot of time. And something that you said that really touched a string for me is about, and I think this is really a universal concept for everybody, which is about not doing things for money, but rather doing things for the love, because the love, then you, if you follow the process and you follow all the steps, even though it's demanding, it doesn't really feel like work. And, you know, the money is just a secondary byproduct of the success that you follow because you actually love that thing that you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I wrote a book called The 100-Yard Journey. It came out a couple of years ago and I've had a couple of printings on it. And I talked to the book about, I've been really very fortunate my whole life to have a lot of good people around me. I really have. And I had a high school coach named Dick Fortner, and we never won a championship in the history of my school. And I happen to be there when we win one. I go to college and this guy named Don James comes in there from Colorado, just 5'9" guy. Nobody doesn't look like a football coach. He walks in this place. He's got a guy named Jack Lambert on that team. He's got a guy named Nick Saban on that team and other guys. But at the end of the day, they had never, you know, they had never won a championship, never, ever, and still haven't. And we end up winning one there. And then I go to Washington and Coach James hires me. You know, it was twofold hiring me. One was, I think he thought I had some potential, hopefully. But the other thing, you know what, when he was building the program there, and I went in as a student assistant in 75, I was the guy that came in and played for him. So players come up to me and ask me about him all the time. You know, they just have been dealing with him and dealing with his program and everything. And then he brought me back, fortunately. So it's been a blessing. You know, how did that happen where I got these two people who had the influence on me? And I do it every day. I absolutely love helping kids. And I loved coaching. And I got to do it every day of my life. And so, I mean, my blessings have been all over me. So I've been very fortunate.
Yeah. So putting a lid on cancer in terms of your health right now, you're doing great.
Yeah, I'm doing fine. Yeah. I'm doing good. I don't have any seek treatments that every 6 months I go back to Mayo for tests, and that'll go on for the rest of my life. I'll probably someday have to get chemo. Probably. Yeah. I'm trying to stay in such good. The other thing you read, it's really, really important. Anybody that has cancer is to stay in the best physical condition that you can.
Yeah.
So I've read a lot. Trust me, I've Googled it a lot. Yeah. And so I do that. And so that's what I'm going to do. I manage it. And you know, I certainly, like I mentioned before, the importance of research is mammoth out there. And thanks to all those people, because you're making a difference. You really are.
I know, because I remember that when all the assistant coaches used to go into Heck Ed and play basketball, you guys would do your 3-on-3 or 4-on-4 and just have fun and work up that sweat. And you've always been in great shape. So you've always been leading that type of healthy lifestyle. But that's really what I've done. You know, I was a gym rat, you know, when I was a little kid growing up all the way through and into college and in the NFL. And I just never stopped. And so I really like to think of those things of being on the front end of it. Versus mm-hmm. where some people get sick and then they make this big discovery about going on Google and, you know, what's a healthy lifestyle.
Yes.
And then, you know, trying to solve the problem after the damage has been done. Right.
Sometimes that's too late too. I mean, that's that you can't. So anyway, I've been very fortunate. I got 8 grandkids. And so, you know, the oldest is going to get their license. That makes me feel a little bit older, you know, just to have a grandchild that's going to be driving a car.
Yeah.
So, but they all live in Missouri. And so, you know, I got a lot of blessings.
Yeah. So I want to go back to one thing that was interesting, and I just didn't realize it at the time, but you actually were at Washington for a long time. I know there was that you were assistant coach, but then they called you back. And then a couple of years later, you know, I showed up as a gangly freshman, 1980. Yeah. But I mean, gosh, you were there for 13, 14 years. And, you know, again, and you mentioned this before, it's just the way that the whole world shifted, the way the sports shifted and the way the NCAA shifted in terms of the money that later, you know, I remember asking a couple of the coaches, like, hey, should I ever get in coaching? And they're like, don't get into it. There's no money in it, you know? And that was those days. But we talk about influences, and you were talking about being the right place at the right time and being at Kent State and being around Coach James and other people like that. And you've got a whole long list of guys like me that say, hey, who are some of those people in your life that really had an impact and a big time change? And I can tell you for sure that I wouldn't be who I am, climbing mountains, you know, my aspirations to play in the NFL and business and stuff, without having that right roadmap on guys like you had learned from guys from before. I've never told you this, but and football is a lot different today in terms of the preparation in high school. But when I was a young freshman and I came in there on that first day in August for camp, and I showed up, I'd never lifted a weight a day in my life. I hadn't done anything more than running around, you know, in the neighborhood with the other kids. And I was going to fraternity parties, you know, I was doing all these stupid things. And I showed up and I was 6'1", 181 pounds, and I could not bench my weight. And I looked out there, there's Ray Horton and all these other big dudes. They're all cut. They're big. They're gunned up. They're confident. And that was not me at all. And I, you know, it really took a gut check, and it took me about 6 months to figure that out. But it was a big time gut check on, you know, what do I want to be and where do I want my life to go? And what you guys did for me, you were my position coach at wide receiver for the first 3 years. But what it really allowed me to do is give me the roadmap to life and really the roadmap to success. And a lot of that, and I've talked about that before in some of these different podcasts, is a variation of the pyramid of success that Coach James extracted from Coach Wooden, the great UCLA basketball coach. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you've seen, a dime a dozen stories like me who had kids who had to figure it out. But I'm partially giving you my story and partially thanking you for providing that roadmap, for helping shape on part of who I am today, and also just trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I don't think all the programs are run like Coach James's, you know how he was, detailed, you know, attention to detail, just have great attitudes, work hard, overcome adversity, you know, and his organizational skills were, he was a genius. And his motivation was preparation. His motivation was developing people and developing leadership and all those other things. He was a huge, huge influence on me. And his program, what I liked about it, his program was designed to help you be a better person too. You know, you have to be accountable. You have to be responsible. You got to be here at the right time. You got to be punctual. You have to learn to overcome adversity. That's one of the great things we all learn. But, you know, people that we're fortunate to play college football too. And, you know, the adversity and things grow a lot different than when you're in high school. And learning the skills to handle defeat and, you know, keeping a great attitude and not having excuses. And all, I can go on and on and on, that I taught in our program that I got from Coach James. And we did a lot more than try to win football games. It was our job, it was our responsibility to help develop people. And Coach James had me influence, and I thank you, Mark, that you felt the same influence. We both played for the same guy. And, you know, it was very, 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 very fortunate. And it's not easy, but, you know, life's not easy here. So as you said, you walked every freshman year, you're out there that field goal, what the heck am I doing here? And, you know, left to time, you know, you could have quit, you could have whatever. And that, again, nothing, if somebody wants to do it, that's fine. But that, you know, you just notched up a few notches, you know, then you got a little better and a little better and your confidence level goes. But the whole program they have is designed that way. You know, that they put the depth up every day. You want to see it, that we don't hide in things around here. And I'm glad that his program and, you know, a little bit of my coaching had some influence, because that's a responsibility, you know, certainly that I have.
Well, I think one of the things that Coach James did too back in those days is, not, you know, he had a great eye for talent. So you certainly were part of that. And then we had a bunch of other coaches that were on that staff, you know, Coach Dorr, and the defensive coaches, Lambright, you know, the rest of the gang, they drove every guy. And in my freshman year, when I came in my freshman class, I should say, that really became the nucleus for that Orange Bowl team that we went back to Oklahoma or Miami and beat Oklahoma.
Yeah. I think that's kind of, you know, Coach James creates that environment with those coaches. you know, a lot of coaches bring their assistants in, just do your thing. If you have any problems, let me know, do your thing. Well, we didn't do our thing. We had standards for how we teach our players. We had standards. We can't grab players. We have standards, you know, that we have our players got to be on time. We got to be on time. We had all this infrastructure is all set in there. And I think what that did, and, you know, Chick Harris, I'm trying to think of, did not leave anybody out, skip all those guys, you know, we had a great group of people. But we were all alike, and we're different personalities, but we were all alike in the same way. We were assistant coaches at the University of Washington. We had a responsibility how we treated our players, how we motivated our players, and we just weren't shooting from the hip. We were in meetings talking about these things, and Coach James would critique these things if he ever saw them out of balance so that we could all learn as coaches so we could be better coaches and be better mentors. So that was it's a very good point. There's a lot of great people that were there, and that – there's a correlation with winning and having great people around too.
What is your biggest takeaway? What's the thing that you do the most similar? And I'm visualizing like Coach Pinkel up on a tower in Missouri. That was classic. You know, yeah. I'm not sure where he got that, but I don't think a lot of coaches do that today.
No, they don't. You know, Coach James used to get, I mean, he was up when I played for him, he was up on the tower, just taking notes. Yeah. But he coached his coaches. That's what he did. He coached his coaches. He watched personnel. He'd take notes all day on all the personnel. We'd go through the personnel, every meeting we ever had in there. We'd go through every player on the team in evaluation. But I think what I learned most from him, everything, organizational skills, learning how to handle adversity. You know, we have a big thing with our players now. You know, we're in August and we're doing a lot more meeting at that time and after the practices. And I have a meeting how we're going to handle adversity. The whole team's in there. This is how we're going to handle adversity. We're going to have a great attitude. We're going to come up with a plan. We're going to have a great work ethic. And we have this thing called perseverance. And that's the fuel. And you get up, you brush yourself off, and you freaking go. And you fight and you battle. And that's stuff that, you know, this was all in staff meetings, talking about how we are, who we are, what we're about. And I think one thing, Mark, that's interesting is, like I said before, all the coaches have their own personalities. We're all different in many ways, and which is great. But the standards of how we coach, how we teach, the enthusiasm, how we motivate was universal. We didn't do your own thing when you went in this program, probably like 90% of the other programs do. And I think that's one of the reasons that they won. But I'm a Don James guy. You know, I played for him. You know, I coached for him for 12 years. I had my opportunities and became head coach at Toledo and then, you know, head coach at Missouri. And so I've been very, very, very blessed and very fortunate to have that run in Seattle. And, just very, very, very lucky.
So I'm going to hang one more minute on the whole University of Washington experience for me and for you. And one of the things that you talked about adversity, about getting through, I think the things that you just talked about aren't just contained. I mean, you would agree with this too, aren't just contained to football. They're contained to life. So one of the things you used to say to me all the time and something that I have said many times and to my buddies, especially one of the guys I'm still tight with are Hugh Millen and Jim Mora. And if something comes
up, add both those guys for me, okay?
Absolutely. Don't tell me about the pain. Just show me the baby. That was something you used to say all the time. We would come back, we complain, coach, you know, there's too many sprints. It's too hot to do this. And you're just like, nonsense, man. Just get out of my face. And just, it's the bottom line, right?
So when I use that term at speaking engagements sometimes, and there were women in the crowd, I had to, I had to kind of preface myself a little bit that, you got to kind of say it the little right way and to get it done. But I tell how tough women are, which they are at the end of the day. So, yeah, that was fun. We had a great group of guys. And, you know, to top that off, you know, with the Orange Bowl win was really what an incredible season.
Well, you talk about adversity. What a credible experience for a guy like Hugh Millen, who was benched three games earlier. I don't know if you remember that, but he was benched three games earlier, and he just hung in there. He had a great 2 weeks of practice down in Miami, and things went a little sideways for Paul Sicaro that was in there at the time. Yeah. And then Hugh came back in, 4 or 5 minutes to go in the game and throws a ball to me. I catch in the end zone and we go on to win the game. And, he became the hero and he only completed 2 passes, but he went on to start that next year. And you're the quarterback coach. I think you're the offensive coordinator by that time.
Yeah. 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 It was really great. It was a great, It was a great win. You know, we were playing remarkable defense that year, so we were kind of ultra conservative. But at the end of the day, it worked out. But that was a great night, you know, when that happened for all of us. And
it was amazing.
I'll never forget about it. I got a photo in here hanging on my wall with Coach James standing outside the Orange Bowl with a photo. And it was what a great year. Ended up second in the nation. And we were there 2 weeks too. Remember how long we used to stay for those January?
It was awesome.
We stayed forever.
Yeah.
We tired you out. Well, let's go play football so we can go home.
Yeah. Well, why would you? Yeah. So I want to make that bridge because you talked about, you know, that 1984 season. It was the 85 Orange Bowl. We had so much flipping NFL talent on that team on both sides of the ball. The defense, for all good reason, gets a lot of the credit. You know, they're known as the Purple Rain. And one of the things I felt that we were always held back, and then I see you go on to Toledo. So now you emerge out of the University of Washington, you get that head coaching gig at Toledo, you go off, you're coached there for 10, 11 years. You have a great, great, successful run. And the thing that was watching you is that you were throwing the ball all over the field. You had receivers on the field. And I was just like, hello. We had, you know, Anthony Allen, Paul Scanzi, you know, myself, Danny Green, Lonzo Hill. We had all these great players that all of them went on to the NFL, right? And most of us were on the bench at the time because we were only playing with two wide receivers at the time. So where was that shift for you where you said, you know what, this is my show now and this is the way I want to run it?
It was at Toledo. I had two shifts. I had one at Toledo where I just felt we had to, or the way our defense was, that I felt we had to, you know, just, we had to score more points. You know, we weren't as consistent. We did great things on defense, but we had to score more points. So we spread things out quite a bit more there. We did quite a few things. We had some good quarterbacks there too. As I've been blessed to have quarterbacks my whole life too. Just, I don't know why, but that's happened. But that's what happened. And then, you know, when it was really the big change is when I went to Missouri. And that's a program that had two winning seasons in 17 years. It was remarkably difficult to change the culture. But Texas Tech didn't have any better players than us. And they were throwing the ball like Washington State did 95% of the time almost. That's an exaggeration. And they're going to bowls every year. We got better players, and we're more conservative on offense. So that's when we really flipped. We really flipped, and we became an attack, throw, vertical, everything, option, throw football team, and which really served us well. And you know, there's one thing you eventually, you know, you got to change. You got to do what you think's the right thing to do to win and be successful. And that's something that that I learned to do.
No, it was incredible, and I think it was also at a time that the offensive strategy was also shifting. So is one, you embracing it, two, having some common sense and saying, you know, what's going on in here with this guy, with these teams, because they're going to bowl games and we're not, and we have better players. So we have to do whatever we have to do to change, not necessarily the culture, but just the system, which you did. And then, you know, momentum gets momentum. I mean, I always say, you know, I mean, success leaves clues. Right. And essentially that's what you're doing. You're looking at a different team and saying, hey, this is working. So, you know, maybe they're onto something.
Yeah. And getting back to my last years as coordinator at Washington, we did pick them. When you left, we did pick it up. Yeah. We got Gilby on our staff. And Keith Gilbertson had a huge influence on our offense. You know, I was from Ohio guy, more conservative. And I was kind of around that, you know, that part. And then, you know, and we are really good friends. And he came in and did really, really an awesome job. And, you know, and he had a huge influence himself. So that started it. But it really opened up even a lot more, you know, when we went on. And the Washington job was, you know, a lot of people said I should have never taken it because, you know, it was really difficult to turn. I mean, really difficult to turn. But we just stuck to what we believed in and got rolling.
Yeah, well, actually, you remind me, back in the day that there was an opportunity, and I can't remember if this was a switch from Missouri to come back to Washington, there was an opportunity, or from Toledo to come back to Washington. But, you know, you were right there, and it was such a bummer, and I'm sure, you know, hindsight is 2020. and you've gone on. I know you're like legendary Don James type in the area that you live in around Missouri. But you know, how close were you to for that whole deal going down?
Well, I think, you know, what we had to do, you know, I mean, we had to change our culture. I mean, if that's what you're asking, Mark, how I mean, you talk about how difficult it was.
I'm asking for, you know, I think you were close to being offered the job to coach the University of Washington.
Oh, you want to touch on that? Yeah. Yeah. I was a little disappointed. I interviewed, I think, and they, you know, went a different, you know, direction. They called me on a Thursday and told me a different direction. And I was a little disappointed because I thought I could have gone done in there. And they said they want to get away from the Don James way, which that's their deal. And then several years later, 2010, when I think it changed again, I think we won 10 or 11 games that year. I was supposed to meet some people at our convention, and I canceled when I was down there. I just didn't want to make the move if I would end up getting the job or something. So anyway, always be a Husky. I always will be a Husky. I mean,
it always works out the best for everybody, right? And it certainly worked out really well for you. And the Huskies, you know, stubbed their toe for a while, and you know, ultimately they ended up getting Coach Pete, phenomenal coach. He stepped down, and now we've got this new guy that's going to step up and give him a chance. And I think there's a lot of optimism about.
Things are going great there. Great leadership. Your AD, she's awesome, and there's a lot of great things going on. I was there 12 years, man. We went to 11 bowls in 12 years and raised my kids there. And you know, I'll always be a Washington Husky, man. That'll never, ever change unless we plan.
So let me ask you this. I think one of the most difficult things at the time that anybody could deal with beyond your personal situation with cancer and dealing with that is you had, I think, the first ever publicly announced player that was gay, Michael Sam. And like, how did you navigate that so well? I mean, because there are so many stick points, just, you know, you put your toe a little bit over here, over there, just, you know, you're just right on the cliff.
Well, we, you know, one of the things with going through lectures here is that, you know, I always talk about to our players all the time about being respectful to people, all people. You don't have to believe in everything they're doing. You don't have to agree with everything. But everybody deserves some respect, you know, initially. And when this happened, we had talked about those kind of things with our players. Our athletic department did some things in terms of, you know, talking about that subject matter. And we had this called crossover dinners in August. Again, this is when we're going through camp and everything. But all of a sudden, instead of having all team eating and having meetings, I'd have 11 or 12 players over to my house. All different positions, and 11, 12 would go to all the different coaches, and we'd flip it around. We'd do it three times a year. It was awesome. So guys were different, and it was just kind of, then people would come in here and we would just look at each other and say, you know, I'm Coach Pinkel. I grew up, my brother and sister had a disease called hereditary spastic paraplegia. They were in wheelchairs, and I go through my deal, and every guy would, you know, it let everybody understand the appreciation for their teammates. They're all different people. They got all different backgrounds. Some kids had a lot of money. Some kids had no money. And so we did that all the time. Well, we were doing one of these meetings, and right after the meeting was over, Craig Kuligowski, one of my coaches, calls me up and said, Michael Sam came out in the meeting. I said, what? And he said, he came out. He told the players that he was gay. And honestly, I never talked about it. It wasn't like there was a secret around. Did you ever suspect it? No, I did. I asked some coaches later, and some said, maybe, not a big deal. So I brought my captains in the next morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, because we practice started at 7:30 or something like that. And I asked them what was going on. And they said, how's the team doing? They look at me and say, well, coach, I think we're going to be okay. You know, we got a good team, good people. So, okay. So you know, they really trusted them. And I really trusted the seniors. And we did many meetings that we had all the time, did that leadership thing. We've been doing it for years. We just didn't walk in and trusted each other. There was a system in place to learn those things. And I said, do you think we should have a – I said, I'm going to call Michael in right now and then just kind of see how he wants me to handle it. He said, okay. So he leaves. Those guys leave. And I met with him every morning for the next 14 days because I just wanted to make sure most of the time they would just be up the stairs. Well, everything's good. Everything's fine. They had one little tiny incident. But Michael Sam came in right after them, and I gave him a hug, and I said, I said, "How you doing, buddy?" I said, "I'm doing okay, coach." And he goes, "I says, well, how you want to do this? Do you want make a statement? Me to make a statement? Did you remember our team and how much you're loved and supported here, or how do you want to handle it?" He said, "I don't want a big scene on me, coach. You know, I don't know, and you know, I just don't want to do that." And I said, "Well, we're going to talk. You know, as we always do all the time. We're just let it go. If that changes at all, if anything comes up that you need to talk to me about, do it." And he had a great relationship with the position coach and a lot of guys, because we worked on unity, we worked on that stuff all the time, not just because it happened. And interestingly enough, you fast forward it, nothing happened during the season. And, you know, he did it right, I think, right before the draft, right after our bowl game. And he came out publicly, and I'm on Good Morning America. I'm on, you know, ESPN. I'm on all those things. And every said, "How in the world can you that happen in August? And no one player made a public comment or statement about it." Well, that team ended up fourth in the nation. Okay. That team was a great football team, but man, they were tight. And it was like this, you know, when they found out that he has it, that's fine. We respect him. That's his life. He can do what he can do. And it's, "I got your back" deal. And I get chills thinking about it. I was so very proud that we had that kind of a team and infrastructure, and we had that and that we talked about. This isn't the first time this came up. This is part of things we talked about, being respectful to all people all the time. And make a long story short, it was talked too much about it, but it was a really neat thing for me to see our team and the strength of our team, and certainly Michael Sam, his strength to be able to come out and do something like that.
I think all these things have connection points to them. And I've got on the screen, you can see attitude reflects leadership. And when you have all those, you talked about meeting three times a year and in these different batches and getting the people to stand up and really get to know their lives, you know, in the background beyond just what they see on the field. I think it's just a derivative towards leadership, because now you're implementing the right kind of attitude that you need to have a winning environment to thrive in. And it makes no sense to tear somebody apart or down just because they think differently or do things differently.
Right. Attitude's everything. Yeah. We were taught that by Coach James. We were taught everything, you know, your attitude. I used to tell our players that, attitude is free. You know, my players would be making fun of me. We're running out to practice, and gave a talk about attitude the night before or something. They'd be running and say, "Coach, attitude is free. Everybody can have it." They were dogging me bad, man. They were, but you know, that meant they got it, you know, that learning how to control your attitude. We did a lot of stuff in that. We didn't just talk about having a good attitude. We talked about how you control your attitude, how you feel it's coming on, how you get it going in the right direction. Because, you know, that word in life is mammoth. You know, no matter how adversities you got, no matter what you do, if you can have a good attitude, you got a chance. And you can almost overcome everything, in my opinion.
Yeah, I when you say that, I'm thinking back to a time when I've got my 5-year-old daughter Claudette, and Hugh Millen, who's got these gigantic hands, and he gets right in her face. You know, he's 6'4", 6'5". And he's going, "Claudette, I got to ask you one question. What's the one thing that you're not born with that you can control?" And so, you know, and his mind is spinning. And, you know, my daughter's is, you know, she's used to watching Barney and, you know, all these things, trying to figure it all out. And the answer was, it's attitude, right? You can't control your height, your weight, your blue eyes, you know, dark eyes, whatever. But the one thing you control is how you want to attack life. And you want to see through the glass is half full or half empty. You know, it's a choice.
Attitude is a choice, and it's free. That's exactly right. Exactly what my player said. And, you know, I talk about that. I talk about a lot of different things. But, qualities of you know, having no excuses. You can't have this excuse habit and success habit. They're not compatible. You know, people have excuses aren't successful. It's just like people with poor attitudes are successful. Yeah. And people, you know, that, you know, and the other component is work ethic, having a great work ethic, because, you know, hard work makes dreams come true. And so, I think those components are really important. And then that huge word of accountability to the people you're around, your team, your family, and everybody else. So those are four things that we try. The great teams and great families have those qualities. They got problems like everybody else, but they got those qualities to keep them together and make them better.
So I want to transition just a little bit. And so you've been out of the game now for a few years. You've been dealing with some different stuff. And so I want to ask you the question, but I also want to put a little statement in there. So you go from, I know the coach's lifestyle because I traveled a lot with Jim Mora the last 6 years at UCLA is more or less a mentorship program for the students or the student athlete. And I know that, you know, as a college coach, especially the head guy, you've got so many different responsibilities. So you're going 1,000 miles per hour. And then when it ends, you're going from essentially, 100 miles per hour to zero. Right. And I think that you've now starting to transition and put a lot of energy into this foundation called GP Made. I want to ask you about that. And what is it?
Made is an acronym for Make a Difference Every Day in the Lives of Kids. M-A-D-E. It came from Mizzou Made. When we first got here, some players, make a long story short, we had some players that were not heavily recruited. They ended up getting drafted in our player development program. And this one of our players sit there and say, well, I didn't come in as a four-star, but, you know, Mizzou made me a four-star, Mizzou Made. So we started using that kit. My players started using, come to Mizzou, because Mizzou Make, we'll make you the best player you can be, and we'll prove it to you, and that kind of thing. Well, that thing carried over with me a little bit, and GP Made, and my wife came up with Make a Difference Every Day in the Lives of Kids. And really, how that happened, how I got to that mark, is I was, I'm doing talks in teamwork and leadership, and I like that kind of stuff to do and everything, but I just, something was missing. And then, but a lot of people would ask me, what do you miss? And I said, I missed two things. I missed game day. I missed putting my headset on, and I was gone for 4 hours. I was in a zone for 4 hours. I miss that, but I really miss taking care of my players. I miss hugging them, loving them, seeing them, getting them at 18, seeing them leave when they're 22, and they're different people, and they're better people, because it's a lot of things we do. And so that's my wife then about a year and a half ago, she grabs me and she goes, are you doing okay? I said, I'm okay. And she goes, I said, I really miss coaching my players. You know, I'm not, just being around them. And she said, well, why don't you start a foundation? And that's how we did it. So it's called the GP Made, for GP for Gary Pinkel, obviously. MADE's an acronym for Make a Difference Every Day, and it's in the lives of children. And so we have three – we started last April 25th, I think it was, something like that. I think we raised about $320,000 in the first year. And when I see a lot more things, we started scholarship programs in St. Louis and Kansas City and mid-Missouri. So we got about 26 scholarships floating there. Hopefully we can double those every year, and hopefully we're going to have 100 scholarships in each one of those cities. But the pillars are for things that are in my life. My brother and sister were in wheelchairs, so kids with physical challenges. And in many ways, and so that's the one component through grants and such that we assist that. It's kids that have leukemia and lymphoma. We just made a big contribution, the GP Made Foundation, to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society for research to help kids. And then the other pillar that we have is kids that come from really, really difficult backgrounds, and you know, in recruiting. And, you know, a lot of your teammates, those guys were so fortunate to have just really awesome homes and such. But I went in some homes that were, I just couldn't even believe that these kids could turn out like this. And so we want to help kids like that. Scholarship's important. Obviously, there's a lot of different ways grant-wise also. And so that's where all our money's going. And I want to build it, make it better and better and better. And you know what? For me, I'm doing something significant again. It's significant what I'm doing. I'm helping kids. And so I'm real excited about that, and it's been really good.
You know, I'm a big country music fan, and one of my Tim McGraw, I've heard of him, and he's got this phenomenal song called "Humble and Kind." And there's in one of the last lyrics, you know, it talks about when you get to where you're going, make sure you turn around and help the next person in line, and remember to always be humble and kind. And it really it takes to heart to me to listen to guys like you. I mentioned this before. I created this campaign called Amelia's Everest, and my daughter has epilepsy. She's 21 right now. She's had it since she was 8. And, you know, to go and I had put a goal this earlier this year before I was heading off to Everest to raise $29,029, which is the height of Mount Everest. And, and I actually, we were able to raise that in a night. And, so blessed and fortunate. And now I'm setting another goal called Amelia's Everest, the Lhotse Challenge, because, you know, we talked about this earlier, about going and raising another $27,940 on top of that, just because I'm going to take on that mountain as well. And at the end of the day, it's not about my accomplishment. It's about what I can do to raise awareness. And it's just like what you're doing, to give back and an opportunity to help others. And the amount of awareness and people that have come up to me and said, you don't even know how much we appreciate you doing this, mainly because of the shame that we have felt from having this thing called epilepsy, has been incredible. And it's really helped my daughter out, you know, in a number of different ways as well.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you for that too. And you know, I think it's awesome what you're doing. I mean, I climbed Mount Rainier back in 83 with Coach
Jim. I remember that. Yeah.
And I'm telling you, that was, I would never do it again, but that was one of the greatest experiences I've ever had in my life. And, but I'm not as tough, mentally tough as you. But I admire so much what you're doing, your goal setting and your accomplishments and the things you're doing with trying to help folks. That, you know, I always tell my players, you get down, you get yourself back up, you brush the dust off, and then you keep going. You keep taking one more step and keep going. And that's, you know, you're trying to teach all those things, and that's awesome. I'm really proud of you.
Yeah, I don't think I'm mentally tough than you or anybody else. It's just the lane that I've chosen, you know, to go in and drive down this. But, you know, if you're going to be a head football coach, if you're going to take on cancer, if you're going to take on some other crazy physical challenge, you know, it's about training your body and then training your mind to take on those different types of challenges. And we all do different things. And, you know, my motivation, you know, am I motivated because I love working out? Yes. Am I motivated because I want to try to make a difference and help my daughter? Yes. And those are all part of the drivers that keep that strong why, that passion, going all the way back to when you were talking about in 1975, 76, when you came to the University of Washington, you're a graduate assistant and you didn't do it for money because you guys weren't making jack. I don't even know what you're making. I don't need to know. But I know it wasn't much because you're wearing the same pants every day out to practice.
Not very much. You got it. Nobody wanted to coach then. But I'm really proud of you for doing all that stuff. It's really cool. And you know, all your teammates. I wanted to get over to that. I couldn't get to that when they did the championship a couple years ago for the Orange Bowl.
Yeah.
I think I came out the next year. I think I could get out there, you know, for different reasons. But anyway, it was just really proud of all you guys.
Don, one of your former players, Don Dow, had sent me a photo earlier, a picture of you on his boat.
On his boat, yeah, Don. Yeah, that's awesome. You know, tell Hugh I said hi, you know, and I'm really happy for him, and, you know, so I really think in Jim Moore, too. Just tell those guys, you know, one of the greatest things about my job is how much you love your players and coaching. I mean, your players' relationships to me, like, are the greatest thing. I went back and Coach James, when they unveiled his statue, I went back to Seattle that week, and oh my gosh, I saw players. I saw Don, and he had all these guys and all these guys. I mean, you back it up, you know, 20 years, whenever it was, and we're hugging each other like we've never even left each other. I mean, it's like talking. It's like that's what football is, and especially if you win, if you got something out there that you did really successful win wise, that bond is absolutely awesome, and there's no other profession like it. Okay, it's also a great asset. It's a wonderful thing for players to have that camaraderie that you had, and you can celebrate it. So that's pretty good. My wife just sent this down in front of you here, right here. This is Coach James. This is a Adidas commercial. Let me get it right here. It's called the James Gang, and it's Coach Fortner, Bob Stahl, and I go through all those guys. But that was back in the day here. I look like I'm like 9 years old here, so. It's been a great thing.
No, I actually remember that photo. So listen, I want to make sure I direct everybody to where they can, you know, touch base with you if they want. And I think that might be, I know you're active on social media. Thank you for that. Coach Gary Pinkel on Twitter. And what is the website? GPMade, is it .com or .org?
.com.
.com. Okay.
At GPMade.com.
Awesome. I love it. Hey, listen, Coach, I really appreciate you getting caught up with me, and it's amazing what you've been able to do. Actually, it's not amazing. It is amazing, and it's no surprise to a lot of the people who played for you and saw your way all the way up. And, you know, nothing but best for you going forward.
When are you climbing? When are you going to go?
Yeah, so everything got pushed out from this year, March 31st, to March 31st of now, 2021. So my Sherpas, my guides, the other team members, all that stuff, it's 1 year pushed out.
I got you. Okay, good. Well, just keep me informed here, okay? God bless you. Thanks for all you did for the Huskies too, okay?
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
You made me a better coach. God bless you. God bless you all out there.
Thank you.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, nfl.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.